You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Good afternoon. My name is Tanya Pinkins, and you are listening to You Can't Say That, the show where you can. About 2 years ago in March, a colleague of mine in the theater invited me to her estate, and she wanted me to try a plant medicine. She felt that in order to embody the play that she was doing, I needed to have an altered experience. Now, my dad always called me an L7, which stands for square. I never drank, I've never smoked, I didn't do any drugs. I realized very early in my life that I had a very addictive personality. I did everything to extremes. So for her to ask this of me was a lot. I always feared that if I ever did any kind of drugs, I would lose my mind and I wouldn't know that I'd lost my mind and I'd never come back, which was my experience the first time I ever did pot. I thought I'll never know what reality is again. And so for me to risk going and doing a plant medicine with her, I thought, okay, I really trust and respect this person because I may die or I may lose my mind and that will be the end of me. But I tried it and it was a profound experience. And over the next 2 years, I have journeyed, which is what it's called when you engage in plant, animal, and fungi medicine. And I began doing a lot of research about it. And so today, it is such a privilege. I'm meeting for the first time someone who I admire in the entheogen world, Kalindi Iyi, who is the only person I was able to find in my research who was talking about the origins of entheogens, particularly psilocybin mushrooms, and their origins on the African continent. Kalindi is the founder of the Temerian Martial Art Institute in Detroit, Michigan, and he is a world-renowned journeyer doing doses of psilocybin that are at very, very high levels that most of us would never even try. So welcome, Kalindi. Thank you for coming.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure, and I'm a big fan of yours.
Thank you.
Being a TV celebrity and a Broadway Tony winning actress and things like that, it's a pleasure and an honor to be on your show.
Oh, thank you so much. You know, one of the things, I'm a reader, that's what I love. And so in trying to find out about entheogens, because once I had this singular experience, I was like, oh my God, this was so profound. I learned so much. I want to know more. And the only things I could find out were mostly written by white men, the McKennas particularly. Yeah. And it was mostly talking about South America. And there was very hard for me to find people of color, even though there are plenty, but it was very hard to dig and find it. And you were one of the first people. Like, how did you get involved in entheogens?
Well, I actually got involved in entheogens through martial arts.
Okay.
What I found out in my study of African martial arts in particular and worldwide martial arts in general is that 90% of the traditional martial arts have entheogens or what they call psychedelics or hallucinogens actually hooked to them. And when I was doing my training doses, which were part of my actual martial arts training, I found out that one of the major constituents of the brew that I was getting was mushrooms. Mm-hmm. After I took mushrooms away from the context of martial arts, I said, this is the same feeling that I'm getting when I'm taking mushrooms. A friend of mine back in the early 70s went to Oaxaca in Mexico, and he brought back some food of the gods mushrooms, and he shared them with me. And I said, this is the same feeling that I'm getting when I'm taking this brew, this training brew. And so making the associations, being able to say, okay, well, this is it. I'm going to explore this in its singularity. So I started to first of all, learn how to grow them myself, because once my friends stopped going to Mexico or sending them from South America, I said, well, I'm going to have to, my person, my contact was gone. So I set myself on the journey of mycology in the library, and different people that I could talk to, you know, going to things like the Michigan Mushroom Society and things like that, to learn how to grow mushrooms. You know, at that time, High Times was in its infancy, and they had very basic rudimentary mushroom grow kits in the back of High Times that usually didn't grow anything but mold. So over time, I learned to grow, and in my study of mycology, I learned techniques to be able to do it. And it was a nice little learning curve. But later on, when the in the advent of the internet and things like that, different techniques were put out that made it a lot easier. But I did the hard work early. And then when the easier techniques came in during the period of when the internet became available, you know, I just switched over to the easy way of doing it.
Now, for me, having experienced mushrooms, I can't imagine doing anything physical on it. You're saying that you were having a brew that gave you this otherworldly thing, and you could actually do martial arts?
Well, see, the thing is that mushrooms are very dose-specific. You have hunting doses, which are doses that are, well, actually starting out, you have microdosing, which is sub-psychedelic doses of mushrooms. Then you have what's called hunting and training doses, which are very low doses that you're not fully in the entheogenic realms, but you are kind of just feeling it and things like that. So you can still function, you can still move. It actually increases your dexterity and things like that at low doses. Then you have doses that are basically from the olden days, 100,000 years ago, 150,000 years ago, when people would sit around the fire and before the big hunt, they would take doses that were communal. Actually, psilocybin, which is a constituent inside of the mushrooms that I'm most familiar with, it was called psilocybin, it was called telepathine because it set up group telepathy. So you had doses that people would take and sit around the fire at night and have shared experiences and things like that. Then there are also doses that are what you'd call sexual doses, which at medium doses, it brings about central nervous system arousal, which is in the male basically not being able to go to sleep, antsy feeling, erection, and things like that. And then you have high doses. Those are the doses where you can't function. You just need to lay down in the bed or on the floor or something like that and try to make it to the bathroom and things like that. Those are high doses. Those are the doses that bring about the mystery and the monosome of being able to traverse these very exotic realms in the multiverse and things like that.
Now, if we talk about what's low and high, what's low and high for you is very different than what low and high would be for me. So I think that, you know, most people I talk to when they're doing mushrooms, they buy an eighth and then they mm-hmm. share an eighth with four or five people. So they're not even getting a 16th.
Yeah.
And they are like saying things happen to them. The first time I ever tried mushrooms, I think I did more than an eighth and nothing happened. Mm-hmm. And I kept trying it. And the first time I ever experienced anything on mushrooms was about 9 grams.
Mm-hmm.
Eating them just raw, just popping them until then I got the chills and I got nausea. And then I guess, you know, after going through the chills and the nausea, I knew that I was altered. But the way in which I was altered felt like, oh, this is what I feel like when I just feel good. Like the world is like mm-hmm. this for me on any day when I'm full of joy, this sort of sparkliness about the world. This is just, people have to take a drug to get to this. This is my normal. And then as the hours progressed, I went through different experiences. I've never left the room that I'm in. I've never even at 9 grams, I feel like for me, it's always been an inner journey. Like I'm looking at my self-loathing, or I'm looking at my sense of what's evil in me. And then I'll look at my creativity or my joy, but I've never gone anywhere other than the room that I'm in at 9 grams. So when you're talking about a high dose.
Was that dried?
That
or
was just dried,
yeah.
And then subsequently I've worked with like 3.5 grams where people put it in chocolate, and that seems to get me to the same place that 9 dry got me. I don't know why.
Well, everybody physiologically is different. You know, some people it takes more, you know. And what I say is that you keep inching your way up until you get access into these different type of realms. You know, so you had 9, next time you try 11, then 13, and you keep going until you hit it. And when you hit it, you'll know.
But what is it going to be? I'm a little scared to hit it. Like, what's it going to be that I'm going to hit?
Well, I mean, it's just that this reality dissolves. You know, the room that you're in is no longer the room you're in. You may be on a planet far, far away, in a galaxy far, far away. You may see exotic creatures. You may be communicating with novel entities. You know, it can be challenging psychologically for some people. You know, so it's when you get your, when you hit your level.
Which is personal to me.
Which
I have
is
to
personal
find my
to you.
Level.
And then you have to look at where you get your mushrooms from, because how they're dried, how they're grown, when they're picked, what atmosphere they're in as they're growing. All of these things are factors on how potent the mushrooms would be, and then the mushrooms agenda inside of it, you know, because they're very picky. You know, when people grow them and sell them only for profit, you know, they're different than someone who's attentive. It's like you have a animal, a cat or some type of animal, and you have a person who just, you know, kind of ignores the animal, and you have somebody who, you know, takes it for grooming and calls it and sleeps with it and, you know, those type of things. And it's kind of like that you... A person who's attentive to these being something that will help you on in your development or on your journey, they're very different than people who are just, you know, they may be selling cannabis and they're selling mushrooms and they're selling combo and they're selling 9 or 10 other different things and it's all just for profit. It's different than somebody who's attentively looking and working with these mushrooms for a higher purpose.
So you speak of them as if they're sentient beings.
Well, yeah, sentient beings. They are. The mycelium is the true mushroom. It is the mycelium, the mat that the mushrooms grow from. The portion that we ingest usually is the sexual portion of the mushroom. The stem and the cap is the part of the mushroom that is now saying that we're going to push these genes forward. We're going to put the spores out so they can sequester new nutrition so that the species can continue. So the mycelium itself is very, very similar to brain tissue and neural tissue. And it's also very similar to when you look through the Hubble telescope and things like that, and you look at these faraway galaxies, it's the same type of configuration. So nature is sequestering the same type of I guess you could say algorithms that are in the soil are also in the stars. So this is because many people are postulating that fungi and especially mushroom spores, which can live in the vacuum of space and are basically virtually immortal in space, permeate the galaxy. And when they find a place that is wholesome for them to be able to grow and flourish, that's what they do. And that these spores of the psilocybin mushrooms came from meteor or some type of impact, extraterrestrial event that brought these spores here. And they found a wholesome place to proliferate and grow. And then they found a creature who could decode and deconstruct the information that was contained in the mushrooms.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
Now, I've read some theories that some people say they think that the jump from, you know, apes to human is possibly connected to the mushrooms, that apes were just grabbing mushrooms in the savannah and eating them, and then that shifted their consciousness. You're laughing.
Well, they call that the stoned ape theory.
Okay.
And it's actually kind of panning out now because chimpanzees are now entering the stone age that human beings were in, you know, 200,000 years ago and things like that. But the thing is that we had many different types of humans going on at that time, and some were ingesting mushrooms and some weren't. Those that did found out that it was an adaptive advantage to have the mushrooms in their system because, number one, it develops what's called visual acuity. In other words, it makes the colors brighter, sharpens the edges. So if you're in a hunting-gathering situation where you can see better, that's an adaptive advantage for you surviving and making it to where you can then have children who push the genes forward. So, you know, if there's a flower someplace and it's one of your favorite foods and you're looking for it, if you can see 100 yards without psilocybin, and that flower is 150 yards away, you won't see it. Mm-hmm. But if you eat the psilocybin or eat the mushrooms, and that gives you the ability to be able to see 200 yards, then you can see your flower, then you can get food. And then, again, like I said earlier, it's actually a true aphrodisiac. So you're going to have more copulations, you know, because, you know, that central nervous system arousal, which means you're going to have more children in a hostile environment. If you have five children and, you know, two of them, you know, unfortunately, you know, get killed by a water buffalo or fall off the cliff or something like that, tragedy, you still have three children left. But if you didn't have that psilocybin and you only had two children and they both fall off the cliff, then, you know, I guess you have to start over again. But
right.
But it's an adaptive advantage of that. And then it gives you access to these other realms of knowledge and information because these are the things that they're doing in Silicon Valley now when they're microdosing LSD and mushrooms and other things to be able to think outside of the box, to be able to sequester new technologies and things that are outside of the norm, you know, things that, okay, let's think about something different. Let's try to work it some way that hasn't been thought of before. And psychedelics or entheogens can bring about that type of mindset to where you're having access to these things. Now, back in the late part of the 19th century, early 20th century, there was a group of spiritual people called the Theosophical Society. And one of the luminaries of that was a woman by the name of Helena Petrova Blavatsky, or Madame Blavatsky, they called her. And she talked about Tibet and India and bringing back sacred knowledge. And she, they interjected into the public domain a concept of the Akashic Records, that everything that exists is recorded in this memory bank, this celestial memory bank where everything is, every thought, every word, every deed, everything that goes on is sequestered and put in that library. And so the Akashic records and the Akashic records, or in other words, the records of DMT, of which psilocybin or the mushrooms are part of, mushrooms are actually a ingestible form of dimethyltryptamine, which is a endogenous neurochemical that is produced in our body, in the liver and the lungs and also the pineal gland. And what this does is it gives us access to those realms. And so they talked about the Akashic records, and then you have those records that are recorded in the DMT compendium of knowledge, inspiration, and these what they call celestial libraries that is accessible by DMT. So that's a lot of what is talked about in the space.
Now, I read somewhere that they think that the reason we as Homo sapiens walking around right now can't access the DMT that is endogenous is because of electricity, that it really is more active in a body in a darkened environment, and that the advent of electricity and electric lights really stopped us from being able to have this direct access. And I even considered going on some retreats where they just put you in darkness for 21 days. And then they say that after 21 days in darkness, you go to the same places that you would go to.
Well, it's not the advent of electricity that stopped it, because even starlight or moonlight in darkness will slow down the production of melatonin. It's actually the conversion of melatonin or melanin into DMT that comes about through the darkness. So darkness was always part of this sophistry, this school. That's where pyramids, labyrinths, caves, these type of things, like the Anatolian civilization in Turkey, where you had a group of people who lived in caves for 4,000 years without break. What happens is 7, 14, 21 days, you have some who stay in 40 days, some who stay in years in darkness, and what they're doing is actually sequestering DMT endogenously, and then the pineal gland also produces pinealine, which is 1,2,3,4,6-methyl-tetrahydro-beta-carboline or something close to that, that is also a darkness chemical that gives you those experiences. But those priesthoods and those monkistries and things like that that were doing the darkness technology were also doing the mushrooms and acacia and those things also inside, kind of like a booster rocket where you go so far, that one falls off, and then you go into the next phase, which takes you further. So darkness was always a part of that. That's what the initiations in the pyramids were for, and the labyrinths, like the labyrinths of the Minotaur and things like that. I was recently in Budapest, and I was in the labyrinth where they caught Dracula, and they put him and chained him down in this maze, this labyrinth. And I went down there to see where Dracula was chained up. You know, I didn't have anything to do that day, so it sounded like a good thing to do. I was going to go and take the Dracula tour, but it was kind of like an eight-hour bus ride to Transylvania to see his castle and things like that. And I would have enjoyed doing a go live from the basement of Dracula's castle. Maybe next time I'm in Budapest, that'll happen. But they have dark room retreats in different parts of the world. I think Montauk Chia has one in Thailand, where they have a facility that was created that has perfect darkness, because you have to have complete perfect darkness. You can't have a pinprick of light. So even trying to do it on a moonlit night or a starlit night will stop it. So it didn't really just stop when electricity came. That helps.
You need to be in a cave or
But you need to be in a cave underground or in some place that doesn't have any light whatsoever. So electricity didn't really stop it. Makes it more difficult, but in a modern setting, we can create those type of things, since we now know that darkness can precipitate these type of experiences also.
What, in your experience, is to be gained from these experiences?
To know that there's something more. The other things are tales that people tell us. Our mother told us that Jesus rose from the dead, you know, after 3 days in darkness.
Mm.
You know, they tell us that Muhammad went to heaven and got the Quran. They tell us so many things that we can't subjectively verify. But when you have an experience and you see somebody with the head of a bird in the body of a human, or you see a person who has the head of an elephant and four arms, Ganesha or Krishna or one of these different exotic entities, that, you know, where do we get this from? And we just say, okay, let's make a person with four arms. Is it any coincidence that in India there are more people born with four arms than any place else in the world, and that's their spiritual system?
Mm.
These are things that they encountered in their sojourns into the multiverse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are the creatures that people saw and had relationships with. And as they saw and had relationships with them, they brought them into this realm. That's how ancient Kemet was created. Egypt was created by pre-Kemetic priesthoods sojourning into the hyperdimensional realms, and what they saw in light in the so-called heavens, they brought back to this time construct and reproduced what they saw in light in stone here. So that's where you get pyramids from, and obelisks and hippostyle temples and the things that they wrote or drew or carved on the walls from what they saw. And these are then technologies that help access these places again, because the metonetra or hieroglyphs in Egypt are technologies, because they're paired with the mushrooms, the psychedelics. They're paired with the Acacia nilotica, which is the acacia of the Nile, which is the DMT of the Nile.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that, because tell us about that experience.
And also the sacred lotus and things like this, they are utilized to have the communication with the different paintings and carvings that are on the wall. You know, at certain doses, you stand before the wall and look at it, and it becomes animate.
And you have done this?
Yeah. Yeah.
So what and dose then would one have to do?
Then higher doses, they come off the wall into your room environment and you have a relationship with them. Then higher doses still, you go into the wall and you're in their world. And these are technologies that are eons old. You know, it's the same thing with the mandalas of Tibet. You know, they make the sand paintings of the mandalas. Those are places. Those aren't just two-dimensional. Yeah, they're maps. They three-dimensionalize. And then you go into them to do the study with the sages of Buddhism by going into the actual mandala itself once it three-dimensionalizes and you go into it. The magic carpet. The carpets are places. Even the Cenobite puzzle boxes from Hellraiser. Those are places.
And are they places that are like Hellraiser?
There are doses that you can take. If you could go, well, there isn't a Toys R Us anymore. It used to be Toys R Us. I guess you have to order it off Amazon now. You could order a toy Cenobite puzzle box off of Amazon, take whatever your access dose is, and you can go into the puzzle box, or Pinhead and then will come out of the puzzle box.
Oh, no, we don't want this. Now, how many years did it take you to find your access, your first access? Because clearly you've had many access points.
Well, I mean, I'm a explorer. I'm a person who likes to be able to access the things of legend, you know. Really what started me off was Ray Harryhausen, and the Seventh Voyage of Sinbad, where, you know, you had genies and cyclopses and dragons and things like that. So at a young age, when I encountered this, I was all in. I wanted to see it. That's why I'm still here now. I traveled all the way to New York to the Black Comic Book Conference because I was an avid comic book reader, a person of adventure. So for me to take high doses, really when I started, I didn't know what doses to take. It wasn't something that was really inculcated into the Black community. We had, of course, our psychedelics and psychedelic music, and that's basically, you know, the P-Funk and Earth, Wind, and Fire and that whole type of thing. You know.
And do you think that they had gone to those places and that was the source of that music, or that was just imagination?
No, I think George Clinton is probably still there. And Sly and those folks, a lot of them are still still there. And yeah, that was inspiration for the music. Just like, you know, the Grateful Dead and, you know, the Doors and the rest of them, it was all part of the inspiration of the music. Mm-hmm. It was part of the culture. The 60s was ushered in through mushrooms. When Gordon Wasson in 1957 wrote his article in Life magazine about the search for the sacred mushroom, it sent young white professionals down to Oaxaca, one of them being Timothy Leary, of course. And, you know, the rest is history, you know, the Summer of Love and, you know, the changing of the guard and all these type of things. But it was short-circuited by, of course, Ronald Reagan, you know, becoming governor, because he ran on, I'm going to stop the hippies in the Haight-Ashbury area. And then when they put the whole thing together with Charles, the Manson family and things like that, that just kind of pushed it over the edge. And then you had, of course, Nixon, and then you had the war on drugs and that whole thing, which short-circuited that movement for 40, 50 years. And we're just at this point, psychedelics are reemerging, you know.
Michael Pollan's book.
Michael Pollan's book.
Denver legalized it.
And Oakland and Chicago.
Right, MAPS is.
MAPS, yeah, with the therapy, MDMA, yes. Right. All these things, you know. John Hopkins, you know, just got a $17 million grant to put a wing, a psychedelic wing, to their hospital. So many things are going on. And of course, you know, you have conferences going on every week, you know, in Prague and Paris and Amsterdam and Budapest and New York City. And these things are going on. And every university has its psychedelic club or society that is also moving forward with these type of conferences and things like that. So the reemergence of the psychedelics is now here. It's really the hottest thing going on, because people are changing their lives with it in a medicinal way, and people are now starting to explore their own consciousness. And I feel that is the most important portion of the psychedelic movement, the exploration of consciousness, because we're moving to a point in time where we have to become something more than we are. We have to be able to think different. We have to relate to the earth differently, because we're moving into some very perilous times with things like artificial intelligence and the 5G that's coming out and all these different things.
Now, what about 5G? What about 5G? What's that going to do to us? 5G is already here.
Yes, it's already here. Well, we don't actually know yet. That's the whole thing. We know that we're going into new frequencies. You know, most of the cellular frequencies have been microwave frequencies up until the 5G, which is millimeter waves. So millimeter waves are actually from DARPA and their military frequencies. Those are the frequencies that they use with the skin heating cannons, in other words, the one where they turn on and they make you feel like you're on fire and things like that. Now, that's not what 5G is going to be doing for your phone because they just want to make money. But if they wanted to turn it up a notch or two, they could do that.
I've always said they could just kill us from our cell phone. If they just wanted to take us out, they could take us out from our cell phones.
Well, and I'm sure we probably look out this window and find some, because they have to put it through all these buildings, because the millimeter waves, they don't, number one, move through objects very good. So they have to put them almost every place so that you can get a signal. Mm. And then they'll bounce signals from the antennas to phones to other phones. So they have to have them all over. So actually, not that they are going to do that, because like I said, they're trying to make money with this thing, but they actually could, with these antennas, make everybody feel like they've been set on fire.
Wow. Hi, my name is Tanya Pinkins, and you've been listening to You Can't Say That on the Broadway Podcast Network. That was part one of my conversation with Kalindi Ihi about psychedelic mushrooms, entheogens. Come back for part two.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.